Good evening, everyone. This is host Terry Lynn Coop with the Blue Plate Special, and I'm actually on the road tonight. I am broadcasting from Shane Yerke's kitchen in Chicago, and I'm lucky enough tonight to be talking to Rob Hart. Rob is the author of The Woman from Prague, available now and picked by Publishers Weekly as one of the best new reads of the summer. He's also author of New York, which was Anthony-nominated, City of Rose, and South Village. And his newest, he has a collaboration with James Patterson that we're going to be talking about tonight. As far as short work, you can find him in Thuglet, Needle, and Joyland, and nonfiction as well at Slate. Definitely a busy, busy guy. How you doing tonight, Rob?
I'm doing really well, and thank you so much for having me. This is really exciting.
I've been looking forward to it. Let's start out with your newest release, which was this collaboration with James Patterson. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, that's still a little surreal, to be honest.
I can imagine.
Yeah, so I think it was last year Patterson announced that he was going to be doing bookshots, which were basically novella-length works, and he was going to be bringing on some new collaborators. And I knew a guy at Hachette, one of the editors there, and the two of us were at a conference, and then he was like, hey, you know, there's this cool new thing that's happening, and I think you might be a good fit for it, you know, do you want me to put your name in the mix? And I was like, yeah, of course, you know, why not? And
oh,
I figured,
no, I'm not interested.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, I mean, it's not for everyone, but I kind of figured, you know, he was being polite, because at that point only my first book had come out, and the reviews were pretty good and the sales were pretty good. So it's not like it was, you know, out of nowhere, but still I wasn't expecting too much. And then like a week later, I actually got a phone call from an editor who was like, okay, let's do this. And I'm like, really? Like, are you sure you called the right person?
That is superb.
But it was a fun process. It was a huge learning process. Cause essentially what happened is, We talked about a couple of ideas, and there was one that I really responded to and was kind of spitballing on and really liked. And so the way it would work is that I put together like a long, like outline, like chapter by chapter and a synopsis, and sent them over, and Patterson would like send it back with notes, and he would change stuff and, you know, move things around and make suggestions. So it was a lot of back and forth. And then I would send in pages and he would send me back notes, and it was an incredible learning experience. I mean, there's stuff that, I mean, I've never had to think so much about plot and pacing and character and how all those things sort of intertwine with each other. So mm-hmm. I feel like I came out of it as a better writer, because now the thing that was really nice is that, you know, all the books that I'm writing now, it's one character who is an amateur private investigator who, I know his voice and I feel really close to him, and I feel very close to the way those books are written. And with this, I had to basically throw all that away and sort of come at it from an entirely new angle, which really forced me to rethink a lot of my process and a lot of how I approach things. So, yeah, I mean, it was just fantastic for me.
So what's it about? What's the name of it and what's it about?
It's called Scot Free. And it's about a man who is arrested, suspected of killing some children. And he gets off on a technicality. And so he ends up leaving prison, and all the parents and the detective who put him away are kind of like, okay, this is not okay. We have to take care of this. And they all kind of form a posse to go after him.
And who's the hero? I mean, what's the premise of it?
Yeah, well, you know, that's kind of the question, because so he's on the run and he's trying to get away, and the parents are, you know, they're all completely bereft because they've lost their kids and they think the person who's responsible is now free. But it's also one of those stories that's kind of hard to talk about, because mm-hmm. it very much turns into a whodunit kind of thing. Because
cool.
Maybe this guy's guilty and maybe he's not, you know? It was definitely a challenge in terms of structure, you mm-hmm. know, especially when you're building up toward that kind of a reveal where you have to think so much about the way you're sort of like laying the clues and laying the groundwork in the beginning. I mean, it was 30,000 words, but I think that's the hardest I ever worked for 30,000 words.
Well, and I was just going to say, at the novella length, you don't have time to mess around.
Yeah, no, you can't. You have to get right into it.
That is fantastic. And you said, what were you given some suggested ideas, or how did that work again?
Yeah, I would send something over, and then I would get back notes, and it would be like, hey, you know, this character needs to do this, or we need to do this, there were also a great couple of pieces of advice buried in there that I really appreciated. Like, for example, at one point I have one character hitting another character, and I described it as getting hit with a cannonball. And Patterson was like, you can't use that kind of analogy because no one knows what that feels like. You know, no one has ever been hit by a cannonball and lived. You have to do things that people can associate with, that they can understand. And I'm like, that's brilliant. I've never thought of it like that, but that is a piece of advice that I will carry with me for the rest of my career.
And I agree with that. And one thing I will always say about Patterson's works is they are very accessible. And it's obviously because he's doing things like that without us even realizing it.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's a lot of nuts and bolts stuff there that you don't even really think about. That is so, there's a reason he sells so many books. You know, I like a lot of his stuff. It's, you know, it could be like watching like a really good episode of Law and Order. And, there's a couple of his books have really surprised me, and that like halfway through I was like, oh no, I totally figured this out. And then I get to the end and I'm like, nope, didn't see that coming.
I totally agree. I mean, I've read tons. I used to bring home stacks of them from the library. So I completely agree with you there. So this is Scott Free, and it is available. Is it going to be available in paperback too, or is it strictly an ebook?
Right now it's ebook and audiobook. They've talked about maybe doing like some print collections of the book shots, but they're not really doing them in print anymore. They were doing them at one point, but I think they're kind of like ramping down which ones they do. This is also like that whole process happens in some castle in the sky somewhere. Like, I am not involved in any of that. I kind of hear about everything after it's been decided.
I think audiobook sounds great. I mean, I just absolutely love audiobooks, and it sounds like such a tight, fast story that it'd be very exciting in audio.
Yeah, you know, I should listen to the sample. I've got this thing, and I was at BoucherCon over the past weekend, and I was talking to someone about audiobooks, and audio my audiobooks for New York makes me really uneasy, because it's so strange listening to someone else read the thing that I wrote, because it sounds so different in my head. And so when I'm listening to the audiobook, I'm like, oh, this is creepy. I don't like this. But I'm wondering if Scott Free would be different, because it's also like, the New York is a first person present narration. So it's sort of that very intense personal voice, whereas Scott Free is like third person past tense. Maybe it's less of an issue, but I don't know.
I'll have to listen to the samples. And I will say, in audio, I'm not as fond of the first person present. Sometimes it doesn't translate quite as well to audio as more of a standard, you know, either a third person or just a first person past tense. So that may be it too. I mean, I'm a huge audiobook consumer, so I've developed you know, that little bit of snobbish taste about what I like and don't like. So I will definitely catch the sample on Scott Free. It just sounds like fun.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, also some kids die, so that part's not as fun.
Well, but the story, it sounds like this real fast moving, exciting whodunit.
Yeah, one person left me like a really nasty review on Goodreads. It was like, I don't read stories about kids dying. And I'm like, well, that's fair. Like, if you don't want to read it, you shouldn't have to read it. It's heavy subject matter. And like, I think that was the reason that it really jumped out at me, because I was a new parent at the time, and I'm like, God, like, there's a lot of really intense emotion to mine here. And it was kind of scary going to that place.
But also, that's like in the first sentence of the book description.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you're not going to be surprised by it. It's there.
You know what you're getting into. Well, again, it is available, I assume, through all of your ebook purveyors. And folks, check it out. It's Scott Free, the Rob Hart. And again, is collaboration the right word?
Yeah.
Okay. and called Bookshots. Is that the series?
Bookshots.
All right.
That's the series, yeah.
And then, I don't know, you just have this other little book that's, you know, been picked like Publisher Week. Publishers Weekly is one of the best reads of the summer. Something called, what, The Woman from Prague?
Yeah.
When did that come out? That's fairly new as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that came out in July. So, and that's the fourth entry in the series. And, yeah, that whole Publishers Weekly thing was nuts. Am I allowed to use swear words? Should I not use swear
Absolutely.
Words?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, I can.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Cause so I actually had been flying to Chicago for something, and the plane landed, and I turned on my phone, and my publisher sends me an email, and the subject line is just "Holy shit!" And I'm like, "Uh oh," like, what did I do? Because I figured like I said something stupid, and he was angry at me, and I opened it up, and it's like, PW picked you as one of the best books of the summer. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, this is probably like a some kind of like clerical error. And then I opened the website and I'm looking at it, I'm like, are you kidding me with this? Cause it's like, I'm very proud of it. I feel like it's the best of my books and I worked very hard on it, but it's also like, I mean, this is the same summer that like The Force by Don Winslow came out, Unsub by Meg Gardner, and all these fabulous books, and I'm like, how did I kind of wind up in there? That's just weird.
Well, yeah, I mean, this isn't exactly your Aunt Meg's reading club. This is fabulous,
yeah.
And you deserve it. Why don't you tell me a little bit about The Woman from Prague?
Sure. So the series follows an amateur private investigator named Ash, and in this book, he is hiding out in Prague from some bad stuff that went down in the previous books, and he's kind of like floating at this point. He's working for this company that's like Airbnb that just rents apartments, and he cleans apartments and ferries people around and stuff. And someone comes up to him one day and says, "I know all of these bad things that you did," and sort of lays out all the previous books. And he's like, "You're going to do a favor for me, and if you don't do the favor for me, I'm going to make your life very difficult." And Ash, being who he is, says, you know, "Nope, I don't care. Do whatever you want." And then the guy says, "Okay, I'll kill your mom." So
Whoa.
At that point, he kind of feels compelled. And so what he has to do is basically the premise is that this guy is he works for an unnamed U.S. government agency that they're finding it increasingly difficult to train spies, because it's so easy to hack digital information. So what they've taken to doing is blackmailing expats into like one-off missions, you know, like stuff that's not really important enough to compromise an actual asset. They'll sort of go to somebody and say, "Hey, you have to run this errand for us. And if you do, you're free and clear." So Ash basically has to do this. And of course, you know, it goes completely wrong and terrible and off. And then he meets the woman from Prague, who ends up, you know, being interesting. I don't want to give too much more away than that.
Sure. I can see why Publishers Weekly made that decision that they did. That sounds fabulous. I mean, it just sounds absolutely, absolutely fabulous. What are the books in the Ash series? It's Ash McKenna, correct?
Yes. Yeah, it starts with New York. Mm-hmm. And then and that one is set in New York. The second one is City of Rose, and that's set in Portland. And the third is South Village, which is set in a hippie commune in the Georgia woods.
As one does.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Prague to clean apartments.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, if I'm going to write a series, I needed something to keep it interesting for me. And what was interesting for me was to put him in different places for each one. Because, you know, I got to the end of New York and I was like, you know, I really said a lot of what I want to say about New York. I don't know that I could actually do another book set there. I needed like that palate cleanser. So it was like, let's send him to the other side of the country. Like, okay, now let's send him to a hippie commune. Now let's send him to Europe. Like, just completely moving him further and further away, because there's this quality that New Yorkers have, that born and bred New Yorkers have, where they think they have the entire world figured out, and they generally don't. So he, he really needed to be pushed out of his comfort zone, and he needed to be, he needed to get out of the city for a little while and sort of find himself a little bit.
Now, are there going to be any more, are there going to be any more Ash McKenna books?
There are. And actually, so the timing is funny. I literally just finished the third draft of the last one today.
Ooh.
Which was very satisfying.
Do you have a title for it yet?
I do. It's called Potter's Field, and it's actually set back in New York. It's him coming home, and it wraps up the series. And so what happens now is I sent it to FedEx to print out, as I always do, like in a coil binding. And now my wife gets it, and she'll read it just to make sure that I didn't, like, and she's great at picking up all the inconsistencies and sort of making sure that everything is working together. And then I'll probably do one more pass and send it off to my publisher. It's due out in July 2018.
Excellent. And I understand what you mean there. I just recently put out a little historical romance, and after I'd let it sit for a while, I realized I'd lost the dog somewhere in the second act. The dog.
Yeah, that'll happen.
And I had to go back and find the dog.
This is like to my eternal shame, and I guess not because I caught it, but like in New York, I read it, my wife read it, my publisher read it, who is from New York, like a lot of people read it. And right before publication, I realized that I had the R train going in the wrong direction. And I'm like, man, like I was born here. I take this train all the time. Are you kidding me? Yeah, sometimes it's who was it? It was Raymond Chandler had a story. I think it was The Big Sleep, where the chauffeur gets killed, and then he got to the end of the book and realized that he didn't know who killed the chauffeur. So look, I mean, if Chandler can do it, you can lose a dog. It's cool.
Yeah, that's it. There's my story. It's like, yes, I lost the dog.
Yeah.
Dog just wandered off in the second act somewhere. And that's the great part of catching these little inconsistencies. I'll do the same thing. And one I'm working on right now, somebody caught, you know, and it's the silly thing, like she's wearing one T-shirt in a scene and then a different T-shirt in the next scene. And
yeah.
Without any reason for it. Just it's like, oops, missed that. That's the reason for it. I missed it. Well, here's a question I always ask about series books, too, is does someone have to go back to New York, or can they jump in anywhere?
They can jump in anywhere. It was really important to me that each book in this series work like as a standalone. And I think Woman from Prague was actually the most successful as that, which might have been why PW really liked it and it did as well as it did. But yeah, I mean, I'm always very intimidated. Just like I can't start TV. Like I can't binge watch TV shows when people suggest them to me. People mm-hmm. are like, oh, you should watch like The Wire. I'm like, cool. Yeah. But like, then that's like 3 months of my life down the drain, because aren't there like 100 something episodes? And I just don't have the time to do that. And I really love the Bosch books, Connolly, mm-hmm. Or, you know, like the Lincoln Rhyme books or by Jeff Deaver. Like you can pick up one and you can read it out of order and it's fine. Like you're not going to miss anything. And you can still feel like you've gotten a complete story, but there's still sort of that wider tapestry that you can go back to if you want to.
And I said the same thing when I had this discussion with Mark Graney about his Court Gentry Gray Man books. You get a richer experience if you can go back and start at the beginning. But I've listened to them on audiobook out of order, and you don't lose anything by not having gone all the way back to the first book. You just get more of the inside baseball part of the subsequent books. Because you know more, you know,
yeah.
You're more intimately acquainted with the character.
Yeah,
But I do have to say about The Wire, when you start binge watching, you know, well, yeah, there's like 100 and some odd episodes. With The Wire, that means Tuesday, because you will not be able to stop watching it.
Yeah.
It's fabulous. It's absolutely, absolutely fabulous. So some of this other stuff you've been into, you recently came out in the new Johnny Cash anthology, Just to Watch Them Die.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah,
and
that was a fun one.
Tell us, it's called Just to Watch Them Die, stories based on the music of Johnny Cash. And what song did you pick?
I picked like the 309. And that was a really hard one because I think Johnny Cash is one of the only musicians where I own nearly everything that he's done. And I went with like the 309 because it was the last song he recorded before he died. And that felt kind of special, you know?
Definitely. And it's a great story. It's haunting. Like the parts with cab driver and everything are just absolutely haunting. And
I never tell anyone about it because I don't want to give away, like, because it's weird. It's not totally a crime story. Like, it kind of is, like, the inciting incident is kind of a crime, but mm-hmm. I always kind of try to get away from, like, telling people actually what's involved in it. It's one of my favorite short stories that I've written.
Well, yeah, it's hard to tell someone about a short story anyway. Like I told you, mine is Man in Black, and you asked me what it's about, and I said it's basically a vigilante story, and I can't really go any further than that.
Yeah,
because it's very short and it's very to the point. And when Joe Clifford told me I surprised him, I took that as like the biggest compliment I was going to get all week.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I highly recommend this anthology to anyone who likes short crime stories and who likes Johnny Cash. It's everybody just nailed it. Everybody just absolutely nailed it with the song that they picked. And that's actually how I got to know Joe, was through the Bruce Springsteen anthology. I wasn't in it, but I was so taken by it that I reached out to Joe, and that's how I got to know him through that. And then was lucky enough to be included in the second one.
Yeah, I went after Joe pretty. Yeah, I went after Joe at one point because like we didn't really know each other when he was putting together the Springsteen thing, but I still had to give him trouble because it's like Springsteen was my first concert and also the most concerts I've ever been to have been Springsteen concerts, and I was like, how can you do this to me?
That was
just a nice collection.
I'm a super fan, definitely. And then to have it start out with that Dennis Lehane piece that was just haunting.
Yeah.
So it was great. Are you gonna see Springsteen on Broadway?
I actually, and this is something that I've wrestled with that was kind of difficult because I got tickets. I'm giving them to my parents for Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Mom and Dad.
Yeah, which they already know, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Because the show, the tickets, the date I got it for is a little bit before Christmas, so I had to warn them. But I really want to go, and I'm kind of – apparently he just extended the engagement, so I'm thinking about getting tickets for me and my wife. But, it's more important to me that my folks get to do it.
No, that's incredible. And one of my friends out there, she is – pure Jersey girl, and I believe she's got tickets to two of the shows, and I just hate her now. I'm so jealous because
that's the correct way to feel.
Yeah, I couldn't even get the code to get into it because I'd have gone out.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in Kansas, and I'd have gone to New York to see that if I could have. So you should do that definitely if you can on the extended engagement, get tickets because I'd love to hear your take on it because I'm hearing just raves, complete raves about it.
Yeah, this code thing is kind of frustrating. There was a thing that I wasn't in the first wave of people, but it's Ticketmaster is doing this thing where you get a code now that's supposed to like keep people from scalping tickets, and I'm like, okay, this is great, this is fantastic, what a good idea. And they just released tickets for this thing. I don't want to say what it is because I tried to get it for my wife for Christmas, and I'm still trying to get it for my wife for Christmas. But, you know, I didn't get a code, and I didn't get tickets, and there are already tickets up on scalping sites. And I'm like, your new system sucks.
And I have to say, during the last tour, we'll just finish up the Springsteen aside, during the River tour, I actually ended up seeing three different of the shows in three different states.
Oh, wow.
I was going to see a friend and it's like, oh, look, he's playing in, he's playing in Louisville. Okay, click. And then they added extra shows and it's like, well, I'm an hour and a half from Kansas City. Of course I'm going to go to Kansas City. Click. And it's like, wait, look, we have Oklahoma City. I didn't deal with Ticketmaster. I dealt with Axio. And there
oh,
was
nice.
Almost none of those Ticketmaster issues.
Jesus,
so
Ticketmaster is the worst.
Yeah, it's not Springsteen, it's Ticketmaster. Because
yeah.
Axio was I could have gotten on the floor at least one of the shows. I didn't even look at the floor tickets because I figured there was no chance. And then after I'd already got my balcony tickets, I just did it for fun. And it's like, I could have been on the floor.
Jeez.
Because they're not being all grabbed up and scalped. So I'll remember that the next time he tours. We have a caller. Would you like to take a caller?
Yeah.
All right, let's see who it is. Caller, you are on the air with Terry Coop and Rob Hart. How you doing tonight?
There's Angela left us to come back home to play, but to your dismay, this isn't your day. All the happy fun time has begun to fade. What just we reanimate?
Okay, we'll kill that, whatever that was. That's
new. Did we just
get
prank called?
Yeah, I've never been prank called before. We just got punked. You are my first out of like 35 guests. You're my first guest to get punked.
It makes me happy that one of my asshole friends decided to take the time to do that. Which is what I assume, like, that it probably had to be.
If you figure out who it was, let me know.
Yeah.
That is great. Now, tell me about mysteriouspress.com.
So that's a publishing imprint that Otto Penzler, the owner of the Mysterious Bookshop, started, where he wanted to take old crime and mystery books that have been out of print for a very long time and bring them back as ebooks. And I went in for the job interview specifically because he was looking for someone to run the website, and I was really burnt out at what I was doing. I was working in politics at the time. I was City Hall, and I was like, I just need a break. So I went to this, and he was like, you know, you're way overqualified. I can't pay you anything near what you were making. I'm like, I don't care. Like, I want to work a job where I'm not working 24/7. And, and so he was like, all right, cool, let's do this thing. And, so he brought me on, and what happened was Otto has this thing where he doesn't know how to say no to things. So he's always buried under a pile of work. And, but he also found that because I had a pretty intense work history, that I was fairly capable of just taking things off his plate. And, so it went on and on and on, and I was taking on more and more responsibility until finally one day he was like, you know what, you're the publisher now. And I was like, all right, cool, thanks. And that was literally the conversation.
So it's a reprint imprint a reprint imprint of out of print?
Yeah, essentially. We've done some new fiction too. Like, we just had a new book out called The Downside by Mike Cooper, which is this fantastic heist novel that I very highly recommend, that I would recommend even if I hadn't published it. But we have books from like James M. Cain and James Ellroy and Charlotte McLeod and Charlotte Armstrong and Dorothy Hughes. And like, the list is really pretty intense. So we've got some really cool people on there.
That's excellent. And then what do you do with Lit Reactor?
Lit Reactor is... Yeah, this is job number three of my three what feels like full-time jobs. Lit Reactor is a website for readers and writers. It's kind of like an online writing community. My job there is I run a class program. So I go to authors and I say, hey, come teach for us. You know, like authors people would be excited to work with, which has always kind of been our business model, which is, you know, like Gotham Writers Workshop will bring in someone who like has an MFA and published one short story. And that's cool. You know, I'm not saying that they don't know how to teach, but we thought it would be kind of cool to bring in authors that, you know, Chuck Palahniuk, who wrote Fight Club, has taught for us. Dwayne Swierczynski taught a class for us a little while ago. Jack Ketchum has taught for us. He's like a master of horror. So we've had some really cool people come in, and, so I bring the people in, I get them set up in the classes and help them develop the subjects that they're going to teach. And it's a lot of fun. And it really, it's satisfying for me because I sort of came out of this class system. So to now be running it is a really, really nice feeling.
That's great. No, that sounds interesting. And I'm familiar with Lit Reactor. I didn't know that you worked in it, and that's great. It's a fantastic program. And it's just litreactor.com if anyone's interested in checking it out.
Yeah, we have that. We do a lot of articles and columns and craft stuff, and we have a discussion forum and a writer's workshop. So it's really it's the kind of place where you can go if you're a writer and sort of develop yourself on multiple levels, you know, whether that means reading some craft essays or taking a class or just chatting with some like-minded people. You know, it's sort of trying to take like that cool convention experience that like I had at BoucherCon last weekend and just put it into a website so you can do it from kind of anywhere.
Yeah, I'm so jealous of the whole BCon thing. I wasn't able to go this year. I'll definitely be there next year, and we'll probably be broadcasting live from some of the events. So tell me a BoucherCon story.
Oh,
so I can
God.
Be more jealous.
You know, this year nothing really crazy happened. It was nice because Toronto is a really nice town. You know, like last year was kind of rough because it was like 80 degrees, but like 200% humidity. So because it was New Orleans, and you would go outside and just erupt in sweat, and you'd be like, nope, done, go back inside. I'm going to live in the hotel now. But Toronto was cool. It was a really nice town. My wife came with me, and she kind of banged up her foot a little bit beforehand, so we couldn't walk around a whole lot. But, you know, we had a blast. It was, it was just the hotel lobby was just like bananas on I think it was on the Friday night, because like there was some kind of weird liquor law, like you couldn't, they didn't have a liquor license for the elevators, so they weren't letting people take booze out of the bar to go into like the lobby because they weren't allowed to let people go up to their rooms with it. But there were too many people in the bar because there were like 300-400 people, like, you know, trying to cram around this little tiny space. And then by like, I don't know, 1 o'clock in the morning, people are like dropping glasses and falling over. And it's just, it's pure stupidity, but it's really, really entertaining.
Well, I remember the last one I was at was Raleigh. And it was the same thing. You know, the bar was tiny, and then it spilled into this giant lobby with just horrible acoustics. So it was just deafening.
Yeah, I remember
and then
that.
And then this funky band comes on to play, and it's like, I'm sorry, this is just not supposed to be live music night.
Yeah, that was dumb. That was so dumb, because it's like, this is not conducive. Like you got to read the room, guys. You got to see that maybe this is not the best night for your band to be playing.
And I felt kind of bad for them, but all they did is just added to this, you know, cacophony that was the lobby, and it was just so much fun. But I did the same thing. I pretty much lived in the lobby and the bar at the hotel, because that's where everything was I wanted to see. Other than we took the bicycle rickshaws in search of Mexican food one night.
Yeah.
which I highly recommend anyone in Raleigh. And other than that, it was just like, I'm here to see you all. I can come back as a tourist anytime.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And man, it's so much fun. I'm actually thinking of bringing my daughter next year, because we have family down in Florida. So we might be able to, you know, bring her over there for a little bit and maybe pawn her off for a sleepover. But I think that'll be fun, because do you know Travis Richardson?
Yes.
Yeah. He always brings his daughter, and, his daughter is about Abby's age, which means we can probably lock the two of them in a hotel room for a little while and let them just, you know, do whatever 3-year-olds do. I mean,
the
all the
Saint
furniture
Peters-
is bolted down. It's got to be safe.
To the St. Petersburg police, don't worry. There will be a safe event. Your little girl is such a doll. I can't even. It's like I just can't even when you post pictures of her. How old is she?
She's going to be 3 in January.
And you were telling me today that she's decided that bendy straws make good magic wands.
Yeah. I was kind of confused where she even got that from, but now she runs around and she turns us into animals, and we have to pretend to be the animals, which is quite entertaining. She's funny. She's we're really getting into like that advanced development of like language and imagination, which is just, for me, is just a blast, because it's like every day she says the most ridiculous things and it's so entertaining.
I think I remember the one little video clip where I think she was yelling at you saying, "No, you chill."
Yeah, I think my dad did that. I think that's my dad's fault.
Okay.
But like she was in a crappy mood one morning. I'm like, "Abby, chill out." She looked at me, she goes, "No, you chill out." I'm like, "Holy crap." This is great. You know how to talk back to me already.
Absolutely. That was one of those where you just kind of hit replay about 10 times because it was just absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
She's just a great kid. That I appreciate you're sharing her photos and everything with us, because she's a little ray of sunshine. And then earlier in the virtual green room, we were talking about the martial arts discipline that you're studying. Which one is it?
Yes, that's Krav Maga, which is Israeli.
And what's it about?
So it was founded by a gentleman named Emi Lichtenfeld in the 1930s, and it was as anti-Semitic attacks were on the rise in Bratislava. Him and a bunch of people sort of developed this fighting technique to defend the Jewish neighborhoods, and it's very, very famously brutal. It's meant to, you're meant to, if you're in a fight, win the fight as quickly and efficiently as possible, which generally means like inflicting the maximum damage on your opponent. And, you know, which sounds pretty intense, and I mean, granted it is, but it's really about survival. You know, it's about being able to be the one who walks away. And, you know, we spend a lot of time drilling stuff like sucker punches and knife attacks and the kind of things that might happen like in a bar setting or out on the street. And they also teach a lot of things about awareness and how, you know, as with any fighting style, the first thing you learn is, you know, don't fight. You know, if someone wants your wallet, if someone wants your phone, you hand them over and you walk away, because those are things that could be replaced. But this is for if that situation were to escalate and you have to defend yourself or someone you care about. And it's, I really did start taking it just to keep up with my daughter, because, you know, she's a little lunatic and I had a very bad back for a very long time. And I wanted to do something that was going to be more, as I've improved my back and gotten better about physical therapy, I've wanted to take something that would kind of push me. And mm-hmm. I finally got to a point where I felt comfortable pushing myself. And this is, it just makes me like deliriously happy doing this. It's like 2 hours every Wednesday night where it's just like my phone's not on and I'm in the training room and I just am focused on what I'm doing there. And it's like being on another planet.
And is it something that you get to the point where you finish, you know, is it like a black belt? Are there levels of it or?
Kind of, yeah. There are 5 practitioner levels and 5 graduate levels. So I've passed the test once, so I'm a P1. Mm-hmm. The test is really like, I am both like nervous and excited about taking it again, because it's basically 3.5 hours long and it's designed to, they really want to wear you out and make mm-hmm. you completely exhausted and completely overwhelmed. And then the test starts, you know, like they want to see that you can do this stuff under duress. So it was when I took the test the first time, I mean, I kind of knew what to expect, but you don't really know what to expect until you do it. And it's like, it was the hardest 3.5 hours of my life. I mean, I practically crawled out of there, and I'm still kind of shocked that I passed. So now I've only got to do it like 9 more times.
But that, no, that's great. And I understand that, you know, creating muscle memory, creating that automatic situational awareness type of thing, that doesn't matter how tired you are.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm kind of on the fence, because, yeah, like, I might do the P levels, like, because P5 is kind of like the end of, like, the first phase of it. Mm-hmm. And once you start getting into the graduate levels, it's really crazy. Graduate levels are more like if you want to become an instructor. Mm-hmm. What I might do is try to get through P5, and then I'm looking at some other fighting styles. I might go for, like, Muay Thai or a Screamer or something. Like, it would be cool to learn a different one, because I just... I'm so fascinated by the process now of learning this that it would be cool to kind of get to the end and then maybe start on something else.
That's great. And I remember you posting one night, you were talking about awareness and that you were like all in a group talking and they basically attacked you.
Yeah. Yeah. We did it was a mass shooting scenario where it was this very celebrated instructor who came in for a special master class and teaching people what to do in like an active shooter scenario. And so, I mean, for 3 hours, we were drilling on all these different things and all this different stuff you can do and all these ways to defend yourself and get away safely and defend other people. And, you know, he gathered us into this circle, you know, to kind of go over everything, which he had done a couple of times before. And then two guys burst into the room with super soakers and nearly everyone got, you know, quote unquote, killed. Which,
wow.
You know, a lot of people did what we were trained to do, which was the people who were further away kind of got down to the ground and the people who were closer attacked. But some people just froze up because, you know, you don't. And this is something that taking a martial art has been really helpful for as a writer, which is there is, you know, you kind of get lost in this fantasy of violence where, like, you know, two people get in a fight and it's really cool and really awesome. But like people freeze up and they get scared and they forget what they're doing and they get tunnel vision and, you know,
yes.
your hands have all these little bones that break so easily. And,
oh, yes.
You know, there are so many things that about the reality of violence that you don't really take into account because it's, you know, violence is terrible. And, you know, sometimes, especially in crime fiction, it could be fetishized a little bit. So I like that this has been kind of forcing me to bring a more realistic eye to it.
And definitely, and you've got that sensation too, that understanding of that metallic taste in the back of your throat from the adrenaline and the, you know, you've been in these incredibly, incredibly violent situations that were somewhat controlled, although it sounds like not that controlled at times.
Well, yeah, I mean, there have been times where, like, I get clipped or something, and all of a sudden, like, everything just goes sideways, because, like, you don't, like, even when you're training, you don't expect to get hit like that, so someone slips, and you get cracked in the side of the head, and all of a sudden, like, your whole body just goes into, like, DEFCON 1. Did we get cut off? I think we got cut off. I don't know what to do. So we did have this discussion before, and Terry told me that if we got cut off to keep talking, but I don't know what to talk about now, because I don't even know if we're broadcasting. So this is interesting and fun and weird. I would very highly recommend Krav Maga or any kind of martial art for anyone who's interested in that kind of thing. It's incredibly difficult, but also really fun and physically challenging. And, you know, this is the best shape that I've ever been in my life, I think. I feel pretty good about it. Should actually probably look at my messages and see if Terry wrote to me. Actually think that we're just about done with our recording time. So I think I am going to sign off because I don't know what to do next and I'm a little scared. But so if you're out there listening, thank you very much. This was a lot of fun and Terry's questions were awesome and it was great to talk to her and thank you. All right. Good night.